Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survived the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 24.
That's like divisible by 12.
It's 2 times 12. Two dozen. Not two baker's dozen, though.
No.
That's in two weeks.
Yep, that's the half-iversary.
Half-iversary? Are we going to celebrate?
We'll have another meatsa party, I don't know.
We might have to have another meatsa party.
24 is also divisible by ocho, so this is sort of like triple ocho party.
Triple ocho party. We can't have a party every week.
Screw you. My life is a party.
Well, I can't argue with that kind of logic.
Kiss told me to rock and roll every night and party every day.
Every day.
Yes, that's how you say it.
I have a question. Who's your favorite Kiss member?
None of them. I hate them all.
That is the correct answer.
Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. I fucking hate Kiss.
You're the one who brought him up. I was just, you know, I had to ask. My favorite member of Kiss is the wrestler who had the Kiss gimmick.
Okay, that's pretty rad. Who is he?
He's the Demon.
The Demon?
Yeah.
And he looked like, what was it? Yeah, that was
Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons' character.
Yeah, he looked like that, basically. He was a wrestler. He didn't last very long. Two cats are running amok over here.
So are you gonna do a play by play on cat fights?
they just freaking thumped into the wall.
Why are you getting your cats high, Robbie?
I don't do it. They do it themselves. I can't help it when they have, you know, connections to the outside world that sneak drugs in here.
Here's a legitimate question. Did they learn it from watching you?
No.
Okay.
I'm high only on life.
That's good.
And heroin.
That's less good.
So this is episode 24, Ansemites. We're going to jump into checking in. And I'm going to lead off, I think. I'm a bat lead off because I'm a good lead off hitter. Wily. I'm wily.
You are.
Like Wily Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
I get blown up by Acme explosives.
You do that like an inordinate amount of time.
I know. It's just like we're walking down the street and suddenly, boom, just dynamite explosions. And I'm there I'm blackened by and smoke and my ears are little shriveled up things. And
boom goes the dynamite.
It's true. First thing I'm checking in with is Nerdapalooza, Orlando's Nerdy Music Festival. It's been going on for a few years now, I think 5, 6, something like that. It has slowly been growing. Now it was actually at the Orange County Convention Center this year. It has been mostly just music. And this year they actually had a little-sized section of artists and other nerdy vendors. The woman that sold you your sexy crustacean set was there.
Ah.
She had other things.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. There's other people we are familiar with that we've seen at MegaCon and at the SuperCon and around Florida. But the Nerdapalooza is mostly, it is a music festival for the most part. I saw Mark with a C. I saw
Randy. Mark with the C is the name of the band.
Yes, he's the lead singer, but he has a band in it. It's Mark with a C. Then there's Random Encounter, which is kind of a local Orlando band. Then I saw Proto Men, which is they're and they're they're more well known. They put on an amazing show. If anyone's not familiar with them, definitely go check them out. I did not get to see. I wanted to see Adam Warrock, but he was on Friday night, so I didn't get there. We didn't get there in time. We missed out on MC Frontalot. He was last night, but we didn't get to see him. We were ingesting dinner. And the headliner on Saturday night was They Might Be Giants, which is certainly a well-known band. They also put on, I've never seen them before, put on a great show. I wouldn't say I'm a fan of them, you know, per se, but I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. But it's growing, and that's a good thing. I'm glad that this nerd culture thing I think the convention center is a good spot for them because then it gives them room to grow. It was downtown last year, and it made it feel bigger because all the shows were, you know, completely packed, but there's no room for it to put anything else. So I think convention center is probably the best place for it. So it's thing ended today, but they'll be back next year. Apparently, they're going to try and do something in New York in next spring. So keep an eye out for that. The other thing I'm checking in with is Brandon Graham's Walrus, which is basically
That's not a euphemism.
That is not a euphemism. That is the name of his newest release. It's kind of a collection of his. It's like a sketchbook / collection of mini comics he's done over the years. If you ever want to see Brandon Graham doodle around with Adventure Time characters, or Big Trouble in Little China, or lots of other weird things, and he also draws lots of women and lots of portraits of his girlfriend. There's also like guest pieces from other people that he, you know, lived with or around. But it's very fun, enjoyable little book. It's on Amazon for like $12. I would definitely suggest picking it up if you're a fan, or if you're not a fan, because you should be a fan.
When was it we did King City?
I believe that was week 2 or 3.
2 or 3 is what I'm remembering.
Yeah, that was early on. And King City is amazing. I need to go get multiple Warheads. I need to go get that, too.
We should do that for Nerd Boy Book Club sometime. It's a good collection.
We should. But that's all I got. Eric, what do you have this week?
I don't have anything fun.
What?
I did a shitload of work this week, and a lot of it involved learning how to do variables in Photoshop and Illustrator.
What does a variable mean?
It means I can create like a text object or a photo object and use Excel spreadsheets to plug in different data and batch create files. And I ended up making like 400 or 500 like art files in the span of I don't even know how long. But yeah, a big part of my week was doing that and just coming home and immediately falling asleep because I was so exhausted. So that's a lot of fun, huh?
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, learning how to do something really hard and high level, I mean, spreadsheets and Photoshop is not the first thing that you think of.
No, that sounds very exciting to me, personally.
You sound excited.
Nothing gets my heart beating faster than the words spreadsheet.
I know. Spreadsheets really do it for me, too.
Wait, we need to pause for a second. I can't take it.
Do you need, like, some chest pulmonations or whatever the shit they're called?
Some chest shit. I do need some chest shit. I think that's
so now it. That just sounds dirty.
That's just what...
It's like Donald Glover saying butt stuff.
What's wrong with butt stuff?
Nothing.
Okay.
I was hoping you would spit Powerade all over the place, but no such luck.
Yes. Hey, and Powerade Zero.
Is this what you're checking in with?
No. If anyone who is on the team of who needs, you know, of Powerade Zero, anyone from Coca-Cola listening in.
Yeah, Robbie wants a sponsorship.
I'm willing to sponsor. This podcast is willing to be sponsored by Powerade Zero. If you're listening.
Oh, my God.
I do want to mention that They Might Be Giants, the bassist, had red pants on.
Of course.
So I think
pants are the new hotness, don't you know?
Yeah, I think that you'd fit right in with the crew there.
You're saying I could be a giant?
You already are a giant. You fell giants, right? I think that's the thing.
They should watch out for me then.
I think you're your nemesis.
They might be felled. They might be.
They might be felled, though. Because they just might be giants. They're not necessarily giants.
That's how that works.
It's like a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
It's like Schrodinger's cat.
It is. They exist in two states. Giants and not giants.
At the same time. So you may or may not be felling them at any one time.
They're the superposition of being a giant or not a giant. This is pretty good banter.
That's pretty heavy. I'm not even sure if I understand what I'm saying.
I do have one other thing I was gonna bring up, and it's some good news. I finished my illustration for my show. Finally, it's in a frame.
Woo-hoo!
Aren't you so proud of me?
I am proud of you.
I bought two other frames. That means I have to draw two other things. But hopefully they'll be a lot easier and quicker.
You have to fill those frames.
I do.
You must fill them with yourself.
That's gross. That's nasty, Robbie.
I meant figuratively.
I don't do that.
I didn't mean literally. I meant figuratively.
Why can't I think of the artist that actually did that?
I don't think we need to.
God, what's his name? He did Nude Descending a Staircase. I can't think of his stupid name now. But
John Karopoulos.
That is not his name. There's no that Karopoulos has never been a person's name.
You sure that's not his name?
No.
The name popped out of midair.
It's Marcel Duchamp, who was a complete charlatan during the modern era of art, but he literally mixed his paint with semen, his own semen. It has been determined that he did that.
That's lovely.
Yeah, he was a lovely person. He also is known for he entered a urinal as a piece in a show that he was actually jurying. He entered it under a fake name, the fake name R. Mutt.
R. Mutt?
Yeah, he took a urinal, wrote R. Mutt on it, and entered it as a piece in a juried show, which he was on the jury for.
Okay.
So, yeah, he was a clown, and he's remembered as a great modern artist, but he's retarded.
Okay.
I'm an illustrator. I think that these people were clowns.
Okay. I really don't have much opinion about urinals.
Well, you can. I said urinal and semen in regards to this man. You can pretty much just...
So really highbrow stuff, right?
Yeah, well... Actually, yes. This was avant-garde art when he did it.
Oh, not no, it's not. It's not tired
early. The early 20th century, sometime in the 20th century.
Well, it is a contained time frame, so there is a limit.
Yes, there is. He did not put urinals in juried shows forever.
For time immemorial.
Yes. So did you enjoy that?
I did. That was good. Good. Thank you for bringing up the semen and the urinals.
Well, you were the one that told me to put semen in the painting.
I did not say that.
Well, history will tell us, you know, what you actually said.
No, when I edit this podcast to make it sound like you just brought that up out of nowhere.
You don't need to go out of your way to make me look insane. I'm very good at it on my own.
Yes, that's true. I think that's it for checking in. we've hit our semen cap for a segment, so we have to move on.
Are you saying I can't say the word semen anymore?
Well, we've just ended checking in, so you can say it safely again now.
Okay, good.
Just Be careful. Alarms goes. I have an alarm officially on the wall.
Right.
And you know, a red light starts going off.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be careful when we start hitting our cap.
What if I'm talking about sailors?
That's different. It can tell
if
contact.
I talk about the Tom Hanks movie,
the Captain Phillips movie.
Yeah, and I'm like, there's semen everywhere.
It can sense context.
Okay, it can sense context. That's.
I wrote an AI program for the semen alarm.
I didn't know you were that talented and had that much time on your hands.
Well, I paused time to do it.
Dude, I didn't know you were that talented and super powered. I'm learning all kinds of things about you.
I didn't do it directly. I don't want to have to explain it on air, but because then it would ruin the the mystery.
All of a sudden, I'm thinking you might be making this up.
Maybe.
You might not be perfectly honest with me.
Maybe not. Before we go to weekly floppies, I do want to discuss a little news item relating to Alan Moore that I think is very interesting and funny. Marvel announced at New York Comic Con that they're reprinting The Miracle Man, including the original run from Alan Moore that led into Neil Gaiman's run. Neil Gaiman's kind of been the headline in this because they're going to be publishing his unreleased stuff and finishing out his storyline. But they're also reprinting the first run, which was from Alan Moore. Alan Moore is okay with them reprinting it as long as they do not use his name in solicitations. Wow. And so instead of them using his name, they're crediting him as the original writer. Like, written by the original writer with art by blah.
Interesting.
So Alan Moore is the original writer now.
Mm-hmm. The artist known as the original writer.
Exactly.
Yes.
He's becoming less of a literal person every day.
Eventually, they'll just show a photograph of his little finger talon, and that'll be it. That'll be his new name.
His little finger gauntlets are gonna. Mm-hmm. Then it'll just be an illustration of like the noise it makes when his finger moves.
Yes.
Clink.
Yes.
And then it'll come full circle, and it'll be Alan Moore, formerly known as the artist, known as the original writer, formerly known as Clink.
There we are. What an insane person.
I don't think he came up with the original writer thing. I think that that's Marvel's doing.
Well, I'm not saying they had to come up with some solution.
Yeah, that's true.
Make the crazy bearded man stop. Jesus Christ.
So, that's this week in Alan Moore news.
The original writer.
This week in the original writer news. If we ever read anything from him in the future, it should be from the original writer.
Yes. He's the original writer rants.
The first and only writer, originally.
All writing flows forth from me.
Even if the other writers don't know it,
I am the source of all your writing powers.
All art springs from the well that is Alan Moore.
This is good.
Mona Lisa, that's mine.
That's the only painting he can claim.
Sistine Chapel, I don't want to brag. The Walking Dead,
I only mixed a little bit of semen in my paint.
Okay. God.
I'm so disappointed in us.
So now we are going to the floppiest part of the week. That is weekly floppies.
You need to say that more seriously.
I can't.
And now for the floppiest part of the week.
I can't.
Come on, take it seriously. Robbie, this is no joke.
It kind of is. We're going to start off with Marvel. We have both books this week are from Infinity. We're starting off with Avengers, number 21, written by Jonathan Hickman, artist by Lanil Francis Yu, inks by Jerry Langlin, colors by Sonny Go, letters by Corey Pettit. The other book we're reading is New Avengers for this week. Definitely read Avengers first, if you haven't already, because New Avengers will spoil the sequence of events in Avengers, suddenly. But, Eric, what do you think about this book?
It almost feels like we should be talking about both of them at once. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's, you know, it's another Infinity book.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like we've said everything from A to Z that can be said about Infinity at this point. Although you wanted to rub it in that the story is taking a turn in a different direction.
Well, we can discuss that when we discuss New Avengers, because that's really where it hits. But this book is some of it's like covering stuff that already happened. Mm-hmm. We do see the Kree kind of separating themselves from the big floating head,
the face of Bo.
Yeah, exactly. The monster, the giant Kree head.
Whatever the hell he is, space head.
Space head. Then we see kind of the results of the war across different planes. We finally see them decide to release the Annihilation Wave. It's kind of a last-ditch effort to fight these builders, which kind of surprising results. I wasn't expecting what actually happened.
Yeah, it was a pretty awesome moment, wasn't it?
Yeah. But finally, Captain Universe is awoken. It felt kind of a little Deus Ex Machina to me.
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty literally what that is.
Yeah.
Is God coming down and saving the day.
And it literally happened, kind of.
Yes, that is exactly what that is. It's, yeah.
But I don't think I don't think it necessarily doesn't work because they're shifting the problem elsewhere. It's not really alleviating.
It doesn't solve everything.
No, it doesn't. It just changes the perspective on the problem at hand.
Yeah.
It makes it more of a, I think it makes it a little bit more interesting, actually, because it's not more of an issue of physical force. Mm-hmm. It's about it's decisions to a certain extent. But, I mean, the art is gorgeous, as it has been. Lanil Francis Yu has been doing a great job, and he continues. There's no Miranda shots in this.
Maybe they've called him out on it. They're like, dude, what's with all the thousands of butts you've been drawing?
There's not, like, giant asses, like, in your face. So, there is that. There's some tremendous action scenes. You get to see the Annihilation Wave unleashed.
You notice how, like, pastel, almost, the color palette of this book is? Like, it just struck me as, like, an odd choice for this book.
Yeah.
Everything is sort of soft purple and pink and like soft yellow.
Yeah. I mean, the cosmic aspect of the Marvel Universe has always been kind of that. It's always been a weird color palette. I mean, so I guess it doesn't stand out to me as strange.
I don't think it's strange, but I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it works, but it does.
Yeah.
But it just seems like an odd decision, and I would kind of like to talk. I would want to talk to the colorists and understand why they made these decisions.
Well, a lot of it is already established stuff. I mean, some of it's not, but.
Well, I mean, you know, Captain America is going to be blue.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, but they're going to choose different shades of blue.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not. They're not exactly coloring them like the Pantone blue for Captain America or whatever that is, you know?
That's true. It's the finesse, the subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. It is a little bit off than the standard.
Yeah. It seems very deliberate, and I would just be curious what their thinking is. I tend to notice the color a lot more than I think, you know, your average reader would. Or I don't know. I do a lot of this digital painting, and it jumps out at me, you know, when I like it.
Yeah.
So I you never hear much from the colorists.
No.
The stars are the pencilers, and to a lesser extent, the inkers. And I think that the colorists really are the ones that take something that's very good and make it like really stellar.
Well, I think I think you know, both colorists and inkers are starting to get a little bit more respect than they used to. At least you see a little bit more credit given.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, still not nearly, I think, as much as they deserve, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is credited to Lanelle Francis Yu, and unless he's doing all of it...
No, he's just doing the pencils.
He's doing the pencils, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly.
Well, I mean, they say inker and then color artist, so they try him.
Oh, yeah.
But
like, his name is, like, the one...
That's on the front of the book.
Exactly.
But, I mean, there's nothing monumental in this book, but I'm still a buy. It's still very good.
Yeah. The whole Infinity, I mean, you know, what can we say? It's everyone's strong. Everyone's beautiful.
Yeah, it's hard to make when it does it very, when you're like, oh, it's another one that's very good and moves the plot forward and is relatively focused and, you know, creatively drawn and beautiful. It's hard to go, it's not, you know, shocking to me, so I don't love it. Yeah,
it's been solid for so long. You're just like, eh, all right. I guess this is pretty great.
Yeah. So that's Avengers number 21. I am by. Mm-hmm. Eric is as well. We're gonna move
on.
Thank
you for speaking for me.
Well, you already said it. And then we're going to move straight into the other book this week that came out that's also an Infinity tie-in, New Avengers number 11, which is where more the kind of the big impact thing is felt, at least this week, in this chapter, I guess, where the Illuminati minus Black Bolt, because he is still kind of missing after his battle with Thanos. I mean, it literally almost just happened. We see the Illuminati finding these builders who are and having like going with them into another world where they've been doing, you know, as there's an incursion event and the two Earths are close to colliding, and they have to make a decision to destroy one so that the universe doesn't explode. They come to this meeting with this other set of builders, kind of. But basically we learn that the Earth is kind of the hinge, and it's their Earth, the 616 Earth. And the builders want to destroy it because if they destroy it, it saves the rest of the universes. And the question is posed to these... The builders basically pose this question to the Illuminati, and they're saying, you have the means to destroy these universes. And it's clear that your universe, your Earth, is the problem. Go ahead. Pull the trigger. And it kind of shifted the focus of this whole event to that, from, you know, the threat of the builders. The builders native to the 616 universe. Which I think is more interesting, really.
Mm-hmm.
More interesting question.
It's good that it's tied back into that. We were briefly reading a couple of these New Avengers books before Infinity started.
Yes.
And I thought it was a really fascinating storyline. I don't know. I was having a blast reading, and I like that's where it was going.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's still unclear how Thane is tying into this.
No, but I mean, Thanos is present in this book, and we see him kind of discovering what the Illuminati have been up to. I mean, he already has had... You see the guy, one of the builder dudes pull out the, like the little mind parasite that was in Doctor Strange.
God, I love that page so much.
Yeah. Just, and Strange is like, it, he like reaches into Strange's head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. Just like it's a bucket of Halloween candy.
Yeah, forearm deep.
Yeah.
And just pulls out.
Let me get a big ass spider out of your head.
A mind spider, whatever you want to do it.
Brain spider.
Yeah. I also enjoy the, and Thanos finds these two, the two prisoners of the Illuminati, including the Black Swan. And Thanos,
Dr. Strange says, Herc.
Herc. He says Herc, yes.
He says Herc.
It's not even a sound effect, he says it.
He says Herc.
I guess it, well, if someone reached in my mind with, you know, forearm
you're,
deep.
You're not going to say something, you're not going to say anything poignant.
No, you're just going to go, make so a
you
noise.
You have to be a genius, like, greatest sorcerer in the world even to say Herc.
Exactly. I was going to say Thanos decides the Black Swan is better off incarcerated. That is, that kind of puts the onus on this crossover, on this event, is basically on the Illuminati, where, like, here, you can end all of this. You can end the end of this. All you have to do is destroy your own world. Kill everything you hold, destroy everything you hold dear.
I think that on this related note, there was an XKCD, like, you know, his side blog.
Yeah.
Someone asked him, like, if everyone on Earth had to evacuate the Earth, could it be done? And with a lot of math and effort, he said, no, that's impossible. So,
yeah, I was.
If they ever have to blow up the Earth, a shitload of people are going to die.
Before before even either of these books comes out next, we got both Infinity. I don't know, 5 says you get 2 Avengers books, and then Infinity 6, and then the last new Avengers, which I think is interesting. The next new Avengers book is after the last issue of Infinity, so I think you're probably gonna see more of this following through after the event. I know Inhumanity is coming out right after this, basically. Art writer is still Jonathan Hickman, art by Mike Diodato, colors by Frank Martin, letters by Joe Caramagna. But I am a buy on this. It's really kind of heavy. This is kind of starting, you're starting to see the end game.
Yeah. I would say I'm a more enthusiastic buy of this over the Avengers.
Yeah, me too. This is a better issue than the Avengers book, even though Avengers book is perfectly good. But this is better. We didn't discuss the art, but it's still...
No, it's glorious.
Yeah, it's still very good.
No, it's very good. I think it's cleaner than Linnell Francis used. It's just the pages aren't quite as full I think it's like just the right amount of detail, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Francis Yu is it's still very well done, but it's a little overdone. This, I think, just it reads a little bit better. Like, I can follow the story a lot better.
Yeah.
Caught up in looking at, you know, excess stuff going on.
Yeah, it definitely tells the story very well.
Absolutely.
So that's another double buy, a little bit more enthusiastic.
Yeah,
double absolutely. By the new Avengers 11. We're going to move on to DC this week. I know Eric's excited.
I am. I'm always excited.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that.
That's true. I'm not always excited. Thank you for calling my shit out on that.
We're going to... First book this week is Justice League number 8, a Forever Evil tie-in. I know Eric's excited about that.
To be perfectly honest, this was not as retarded as the other ones.
I agree with you. It is not as retarded.
I think it's just because, like,
it's not Geoff Johns writing it. That also
is that right?
Yes, it's Matt Kent, who I have more respect for as a writer. Matt Kent is the writer. Doug Mankey pencils with Christian Alami and Tom Wynn. Whoa, my God, there's a lot of inkers on this. Krishna Lamy, Tom Nguyen, Keith Champagne, and Mark Deering did the inks with Gabe El Tabe. Gabe El Tabe? El Taib?
El Taib?
Maybe. And Hi-Fi as colors. DC Lettering did, I guess, their in-house letters did the letters. But yeah, this is not as retarded as the rest of the issues of Forever Evil we've read. This is kind of investigating where the Justice League has gone, all the people that are missing. It's told through the point of basically of Martian Manhunter. He's investigating. He's like found himself in this weird world, and there's these hatches throughout. As he goes deeper, he finds all the different heroes engaged in different conflicts. It's kind of like a Matrix kind of idea,
mm-hmm.
where they're trapped in these worlds that are meant to contain, like, you know, keep them occupied, and they don't know aren't real. The idea isn't anything super original, but it's executed, you know, well enough.
I would say compared to everything else we've read in this arc, this is it's palatable, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And if this was my first issue, I would have read the rest of it. I would have been interested, and then I would have been very disappointed.
You get clear character motivation for all the heroes and why they're not, you know, why they're trapped here, and it makes sense for the most part for each of them. You know, Wonder Woman's tied up in battle. Shazam is happily destroying robots. Superman is in the middle of like a moral dilemma because he murdered someone, and Flash is like trapped in his own. He's moving so quickly that he can't move at all. What's the Green Lantern's deal?
He's the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, he's really hung up on that. Why is he wearing a Gimp mask? Whose decision was that?
I don't know. I don't know why they made Jon Stewart wear the Gimp mask. But, yeah, do you like the art on it?
Yeah, I'd say it's your standard superhero art nowadays. Yeah,
it's like, hey, if someone went, well, what's comic book art look like? I'm like, well, here, this is...
Yeah, this is what it looks like.
This is superhero art.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, it's... I would say it's better than that, because I would say that your average superhero art is probably not quite as good as this, but at the same time, it's hard for me to get excited about. But it tells the story, it's very clean, they capture the characters very well. I mean, it's a good, solid issue.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot better than Forever Evil.
Well, you know, that's not a very high standard to set.
That's true.
It's a pretty shitty standard to set.
I don't know if it doesn't want to make me go read Forever Evil. It does make me. I'd like to finish reading this little mini arc within the storyline. I guess it's hard to read DC Comics and not get tied up in this event because it's covering so much crap. But I'm kind of on the fence with this issue. I would say. What are you, Eric? Sway me.
Honestly, unless you're just crazy for the Justice League, just based on what it's tied into. I mean,
yeah.
On itself, it stands on its own, but everything that it's tied into so far has been horrible. So why would you subject yourself to one issue when everything else related to it is bad? Yeah. You know?
I don't know about all the other tie-ins. Some of them might be good, but...
The main story has
been terrible.
Everything we've checked out has been bad.
Yes.
And unless you're just absolutely bananas about these Justice League characters, you know, unless you're a huge fan for it, I mean, why would you buy this? That's my thinking.
No, you're right. I have to agree with you there.
I mean, it's good enough to buy and read, and, you know, maybe the rest of this arc with them like escaping from this prison, maybe it's going to be fascinating. You know, maybe it'll be the part that's salvageable, but as it stands, I don't think there's a reason to get it.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's not worth investing your time in when the rest of it it's not going to probably pay off in any meaningful way.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I feel.
So, yeah, I'm going to join Eric there. Do not Justice League of America number 8. A perfectly solid issue, but do not buy. It's not worth not worth your time. Next up, second book of DC this week is finally after freaking Villains Month and all this garbage, finally get the next Animal Man. Animal Man number 24. Written by Jeff Lemire with art by Raphael Arbuquerque, colored by Dave McCraig. Where's the credits page? I need the rest of the guys. Why can DC never put their credits page like in a reliable place? It's always like at the end or the like fifth page or something. Yeah, artist, interior, cover, Raphael Albuquerque, colors, Dave McCraig, letters, Jared K. Fletcher. That is what I was looking for. But this is continuing basically Brother Blood taking over the Red with both Animal Man and his daughter struggling because the kind of the power, the movement of power has shifted so that they're kind of suffering from the same damage that the Red is because they're connected to it. And we do get more adorable animal pirates.
That is the real reason for picking up this book.
I mean, yes. How many giraffe pirates do you get? Or Irish setter pet pirates?
Mm-hmm. Or parrots with beards. Or
parrots with, like, big red dwarven beards.
Yeah. It's pretty special.
Yeah, but it's gotten kind of dark, this book. The Brother Blood and his minions have started taking hostages in the real world after taking control of the Red. And Animal Man is kind of going to have to try and figure it out. I think this is going to be going on for a while, actually, because this is... I mean, he's got to take control of the... Take back the Red. Yeah, save all these hostages that the Red's going to kill. All these Hollywood socialites. His buddy from Buddy Baker's acting career. But,
That part made me think of, Silent War.
Which, the part of in the auditorium?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It does, it is similar to that. With all the tendrils,
mm-hmm.
you know, taking control of people. But I enjoyed this. I have been enjoying this entire run.
What did we, was it Batman Black and White that Albuquerque did?
Yeah, he did a story. He did the art for one of those stories in there.
Okay.
That's
good stuff. This is really nice art.
Yeah, it is. It's very good.
It's, he's doing pencils and inks. Or possibly just, you know, maybe he's just starting and doing it all with a brush or something. But it's got a really good feel to it. You know, one of the things that I like about it that almost no one can do right. First of all, he actually can draw like a child. And it doesn't look just like a tiny adult.
Yes.
And second of all, she looks like her mother.
I didn't even look at that.
And that jumps out as that like he actually put some thought into it.
She does. You're right. Know. She I does like look that. Like her mother.
I like that about it. You know what jumps out at me as being really weird, though, is all the pages where he signed.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a really... Or at least when I was in school for illustration, they taught us that's kind of an arrogant thing to do. That you're kind of hurting your illustration, you know, especially in a scenario like this.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like saying, hey, I'm the center of attention and not my illustration.
Yes.
An illustration has utility, and here it's to tell the story.
Right.
Not to show off your damn signature.
I've seen it 4 times.
Yeah, there's several in here. But, like, it's a huge focal point. Like, it's in a big open area.
Well, yeah, one of the last pages where they're... Mm-hmm.
Where they're hugging, and it's like this...
There's it's a whole, like, a blank space.
Yes,
for the most part. And then suddenly, you know, in the corner, it's a big emotional moment, too. A big, heavy moment. And,
yeah, and it kind of ruins it.
Yeah, it does detract from it. Because it destroys your suspension of disbelief. It takes you out of the story.
I honestly think that the person doing the color should have just removed it. Although that probably would have started some beef with the artist.
Probably.
But I think that as nice as this artwork is, as talented as he is, his name's already on the cover.
Yes.
It's actually detracting. It's making his art worse.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the motivation is, really.
Either being arrogant or not knowing better.
But aside from that, the story is quite excellent. It's progressing, told very well. Get some really heavy emotional beats in the story. Leaves you not with a good cliffhanger. You want to keep reading. And has Jeff Lemire gotten a stay of execution from you, Eric?
He gets a pass for Animal Man.
Okay.
It is interesting that I feel like I should hate Animal Man, but it's like I love the Grant Morrison. I love the Grant Morrison run. This is great. It just seems like everything related to him is pretty solid. I mean, obviously every book can't be great, but it just feels like it's actually pretty rich. You know, yeah. There's a lot to draw on.
And both this run and Grant Morrison's run are very different from each other, but they still work very well in their own way.
I think I like the new 52 Animal Man better. I like explaining his powers away with magic.
Yeah,
because the Grant Morrison explanation was senseless. It did not make sense. Zero sense.
No, and I don't think Grant Morrison really cared.
No, I don't think he did either. I mean, he wrote himself into it.
Yes, he did.
So he's always been like, ah, fuck it, I'll do what I want.
Exactly. But
vegetables.
Animal Man number 24. I'm a bye.
I recommend it as well. Bye.
Last up this week is Buzzkill number 2.
So it's actually worth opening this shitty app for.
Get your Dark Horse app open. They say that's actually one of the things getting in the way of digital comics, you know, doing better, is that the fact you have to. Dark Horse, who's a relatively large, you know, publisher, has their own app separate from everyone else on Comixology.
Right. So they probably just don't want to pay whatever percentage that goes to the distributor, and
they don't. That's the exact reason they do not want to give that piece of the pie to Comixology when they can take it themselves.
But I can't help but think that. I mean, maybe it's just because they think that they have enough brand recognition, but you can't tell me that it's not just, you know, deterred some casual readers that have Comixology. I don't know, and maybe that is their reasoning, that they figure that anyone that is into comics enough to put Comixology on their iPad would also do the Dark Horse app. But honestly, in my case, I wouldn't have ever done it if you hadn't told me that it was a separate app.
Yeah, exactly. And I think and you are a relatively savvy person.
I like to think so.
Yeah, I mean, you're much more savvy than most people who have tablets. So I probably does deter some people who aren't even aware that it's out there. But this is Buzzkill number 2. Plot by Donnie Cates and Mark Resnicek. Script by Donnie Cates. Art by Jeff Shaw. Colors by Lauren Affey. This is the second issue of a 4-issue miniseries. It's moving very quickly. We get to see a little bit more backstory from the unnamed hero. And him, finally, a big, big freaking brawl with all his supervillains, basically. Who, calling it a brawl, I guess, is incorrect, because they really just beat the living shit out of him. But then we get to see one of his buddies come in and help him out. Him get drunk on communion wine.
it's pretty epic.
And then, like, ridiculous levels of violence. I believe that is him pulling someone's head off by...
Now, that's what I didn't understand, is how can you have a rogues gallery if you just murder them? You know?
I find it hard to believe if he just, like,
kills people every time he fights.
I'm not sure,
how is someone
if he's, like, done this in the past. I think this is just him, you know, he just got the living shit kicked out of him by, like, 50 supervillains at once. He's probably just, I don't know, fed up and... We still have not been shown this, like, moment that made him want to get clean. And I think that's the thing. We'll have to see what that is. I have a feeling that that is more due to damage to innocent people than it is anything involving villains.
Right.
But the violence is somewhat shocking. When he's just sitting at this AA meeting, and then suddenly they go into this battle, and he's getting stabbed and beaten to death, and then suddenly he's ripping people's heads off and ripping them in half. But I'm really intrigued by this Dr. Black.
I love this guy. he's like
if Dr. Strange was Shaggy. It's basically if Shaggy was Doctor Strange.
I like Shaggy, but I was also going to say he's like...
Or Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa is also another good element. I was going to say he's like Jack Sparrow.
Yes, yes.
Like
influences. A very eccentric, super-powered magician.
And he's wall-eyed. I love that.
He has a Q in his name.
Yes.
He's black, but it's B-L-A-Q-K.
Yes.
Dr. Black. Now say it correctly.
Don't mispronounce it. You said black. It's black.
It's not black. It's black. Get it right. But he's his sponsor, and he's drinking openly in front of him. So I think – and that alone introduces a unique element, plus this mystery bandaged person in this hospital at the very end. We're gonna find out who that is, and I think that's probably the source of a lot of his guilt. Whoever this person is, that's gonna come back into his life. The art again is very good. Strong.
I really really enjoy it.
Yeah, and it brought in a little bit like more action in this one, and it's handled very well. As much as it was, I mean, as the first issue didn't have nearly as much. And this time you see it, and it's handled just as well as the more quiet scenes, I would say.
You know what's interesting about this is a lot of the same colors that were in the Avengers book. I'm seeing them repeated here.
Purples.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. The same sort of pastel colors.
Yeah.
Aside from a lot of it is the sort of blue-green.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a modern trend anyway, is the blues and blue greens, you know, contrasted against orange.
Yeah.
There was like a meme on Reddit where they showed like 10 or 15 movie posters it wasn't just movie posters. It was actually
still
frames. It's still frames from movies.
Yeah.
And it's all like those colors.
Yeah. Blues and oranges are very in vogue in cinema right now, like in arty movies, which, I mean, it's mostly pretty, but I'm a big fan of this book. It's really good.
It's excellent. It's very, very good.
I will be buying the collection of this whenever it is published. I mean, it's going to be 4 issues. I don't know if they have an ongoing in mind after it's over. I don't know if it'd even be as interesting if it was an ongoing.
So it's just a succinct story about this guy. Just get in and get out.
I don't know. It's a miniseries now, but a lot of times publishers do that as kind of test drives,
right?
For ongoing, like, oh, we'll do this miniseries. We'll see how well it sells. If there's enough interest, and the creative team has more material, we'll do an ongoing that springs basically from the mini. That has happened for a long time in comic books, but you see it more often now just because there's more comics, really. Story's really interesting. Art's great. I'm a buy. This is probably my pick of the week. And that's saying something after Infinity, the new Avengers book. But
yeah, this is my favorite for the as well. Have we been unanimous on everything?
I think we have.
I think we need some more points of contention.
Well, yeah, I think we had enough contention last week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
This is the week of harmony.
when we argue so much that I have to cut out like 20 minutes of us yelling at each other. I think that's too much. You know, we want the,
so we need to release a bonus episode of us just screaming at each other.
I think we need the audience to believe that we actively don't hate each other. Band. I think that's important. I think it kind of makes some people uncomfortable.
Nah.
But that's the buzzkill number two. We are a double buy on that. And both are, it's our favorite book of the week. So if you have not,
It's a buzzkill.
If you have not reading, if you are not reading that, definitely get one. Go back and get one. Get number two. Came out. That is quite an excellent story. So time to put away the iPad. At least for me.
Not for this guy.
Oh, not for you. Eric's all fancy pants. He doesn't use paper anymore.
I actually had a copy of Persepolis, but...
Spoiler alert, that's what we're reading this week for Nerdboy Book Club!
Well, forgive me for not letting you introduce it there.
No, it's fine. We already, I mean, we talked about it last week anyway.
I'm pretty sure we did.
And put it...
It was spoiled last week after we had a shouting match.
I know, I'm just being silly. With Nerdboy Book Club this week, we are doing Persepolis, and we thought it very apropos after we did Habibi last week. This is another book with a kind of heavy cultural Middle Eastern kind of ideas and perspective. So, you know, we'd like, and this was actually written by an actual, you know, Iranian. So, you know, we'd like to get kind of a different take on it. But this week, yeah, we're doing Persepolis by Marjan. Thank you. Marjan Satrapi.
Satrapi. I don't know.
Okay.
But I know at least in the French dialogue of the film, it's Marjan.
Okay. So Marjan Satrapi. Mm-hmm. We'll go with that. This is basically her story growing up in the middle of the Iran, in the middle of the revolution, when the Shah was cast out of power and they basically installed a theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And her kind of growing up through puberty into a young adult, you know, moving, going abroad and seeing all her different perspectives on all this stuff.
I will say that almost everything I know about Iran comes from the film and now this book. as a very ignorant American. I don't know. I think most countries only know about the history of their own country and, you know, the ones that are relevant to them. Like, we know, we're taught a little bit of, like, English and European history.
Yeah.
And the 200 plus years of our own.
Yeah, we're not really, American students are not given much perspective on Asian or Middle Eastern or African history pretty much at all.
Yeah,
unless you actively seek it out, you're not going to get anything from it for the most part, aside from very, very broad strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a little bit of South American and Central American just because they're closer. But other than that.
I mean, just history is just so broad and nuanced, you know?
Yeah.
And unless you have some sort of vested interest in it, i.e. it's your own country, it can be really boring. Because a lot of it just ends up being like the, you know, statistics about wars and assassinations, yes. Dates.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Yeah. Unless you get someone who can actually, you know, kind of provide a window into the... It can get very dry. So I luckily had a pretty talented history teacher in high school, so... It made it more interesting. And generally, people mm-hmm. who have, you know, who can provide that kind of insight, that's what makes it interesting. And this book does do that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that I think that that's one of the reasons this works, is because it shows that human aspect of these, you know, political and, you know, these wars and, I don't know, it humanizes it and it makes it worth reading.
Absolutely. I mean, the book, it goes through her
how old is she when the book is first starts? Not very old, but like 7 or 8 or something like that. Even younger.
I want to say she's under 10.
Yeah, and then it starts with her parents as kind of these. They're wealthy.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. I mean, they're not rich by any means, but they're well off. Upper middle class at least.
Yeah.
What does he drive? A Cadillac? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a point of shame for her because she feels like, you know, they shouldn't be driving something so nice.
Well, I like that because she felt shame for being in the Cadillac, but she didn't know why.
Yeah.
And then later she figures it out.
Yeah. And it feels true because all these perspectives are kind of honest. You know, mm-hmm. She doesn't like try and paint things try and make people look better than they are, including herself.
Right.
As a child, she sometimes is very blunt and not intelligent. You know, she looks in the eye, through the eyes of what a child would see. It's very, mm-hmm. The world is black and white. It's, you know, everything's simple. And I think that book, it shows it right before the revolution and then kind of her parents' role in it, which is they're both revolutionaries. Is her grandfather is killed, as well as her uncle, for their part in trying to get the Shah out of power. And I think that it also, because it kind of puts her in the middle of this, in the middle of the revolution. It makes these people seem more important because they are actually active. They go to protests. They have friends who are killed. They have relatives that are killed, you know, that are, you know, tried as spies or traitors. But I think the political, obviously, political culture and place in the revolution, plus the role of a religion in the revolution. I think those are the two real themes of this book.
Hmm.
I mean, you see her actually, she illustrates her talking to God at multiple points through the book. And I think that's pretty interesting. Where she shows how religion literally has this place in her life. And then as this theocracy is installed, you kind of see, it's strange, I guess, how heavily it like takes control of their lives. And how much intrusion they're willing to accept just to stay in their homes, I guess. Stay where they feel that where their home is.
Well, not even as much as that they will accept, as much as they sort of have to accept. They're getting arrested for going to a party.
Yeah. Or it's wearing their scarf incorrectly or wearing lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I see there's points in it where they could have left. I think, like the family in general, and they don't. Mm-hmm. And it kind of shows that they have ownership. They feel like it's their country, and they've had a role in it, and they want to continue to have a kind of try and have a role in shaping it, even though it seems to be helpless at a certain point.
That and they're worried about moving to another country and becoming destitute.
That's also true. That's brought up multiple times in this book. Where these people who are, you know, well off in Iran, who have excellent jobs, you know, engineers and public public servants and stuff like that, and you see them move to these other countries to escape the regime, and they are instantly, you know, hairdressers or mm-hmm. nothing. You know, they aren't important. They don't have jobs. If they do have a job, it's, you know, something that's well below their skills. Do you like the art style in this, Eric?
That is that's a complicated question. Before I started reading this, I was thinking about, you know, like I wonder why people that aren't into like comic book culture or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, however you would define someone that would draw a comic like this. Like, why would they try and tell their story in a comic book form? Like, what's the value there? You know, what? And I just ended up thinking, like, it's just for whatever goofy hipster reasons. And I the more I read this book, the more that felt like a really unfair judgment, because more and more I identified a lot with not her experiences necessarily, but there was something about what she was saying about being an artist that spoke to me. So I don't know really how I feel about the art. I feel like it has a character that tells the story and says something about who she is, just on a level of looking at it and seeing pretty artwork. It doesn't really capture me that way. But I don't know if this book should have been done any other way. Persepolis wouldn't be Persepolis if it looked, you know, if Craig Thompson had drawn it.
Yeah, it's certainly not. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say he's certainly his artwork is more beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, he's a much more competent artist, which is what I was going to say.
But this story, I think, is more clearer. And it certainly rang more true to me. Like, I felt more in reading this than I did at BB. I certainly felt her levels of isolation.
Yeah.
And her...
It's a very honest story. And it's... One of the things that I like about it is it's not... It doesn't feel preachy or judgmental at all.
No.
It just sort of is showing you things, and she's saying, here are the bald facts about what happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, here are these real events, and you can draw your own conclusion from it.
Yeah. It's very... autobiographical. Even though there are moments of humor. Did they ring true to you?
Which ones?
I
know I really liked Karl Marx.
Yeah.
Breaking Rene Descartes' skull.
Yeah, there's other things similar to that where it's just, you know, like little silly things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or moments with her weirdo friends that she finds in Arco, the weirdo anarchist or whatever, the nihilist,
the douchebag with a mohawk.
Yeah, the douchebag with a mohawk.
Yeah. I laughed out loud when it got to that point where it said he got expelled from school. I'm like, yeah, that guy looks like he would get expelled.
Yeah. The fact that every time that he tried to win an argument with her, she just brings up the fact that, you know, members of her family are dead, and he just immediately shuts up. He's like, "Oh, yeah."
So what were you asking me about the humor, though? That I wasn't understanding.
Well, just in contrast to Habibi, because this book felt, I don't know, that like it didn't, like it is a very serious book. There are very, I mean, it's pretty heavy in time, so that's not nearly as difficult to read as Habibi is at certain points. But I don't know if it, some, the humor in certain parts of it, it made it feel lighter. I thought it was successful in that.
Yeah.
Like it made it was successful in lightening the mood of the book, so that it.
Well, it all feels, when you look at it that way. I mean, I feel like she's done a good job of you know, weaving it in there, because it didn't feel like, oh well, here's a bunch of goofy shit, but it feels like she was, you know, calculated about it, so where it didn't get just too overbearing. I imagine she probably could have dwelt in the parts of her life that were very hard on her for a lot longer, but she probably left in, you know, just the right amount. Like those 3 months.
Yeah.
Like that, when she was homeless, that could have probably been expanded upon, but, you know, she left in just the right amount, skimmed over it. There's an element of being selective and omitting things, and you know, it makes it a better narrative.
Yeah, and I'm like, and the kind of the gallows humor is more successful through, like, you know, their walk. She makes light of it, and then it also hammers home the kind of actual heaviness of it at this kind of almost always in the same page. Sometimes, like when she goes home finally after being homeless, she goes back to Iran, and like
every street he's named after a martyr.
Right.
And, you know, they make jokes about it, and then she's like, oh, I felt like walking through a cemetery.
And at the same time, you know, here's a story about some dumb shit I did as a kid.
Yeah. I think that makes the impact of, you know, the stories of the revolution and the new regime feel more real, because it ties it to her life in a meaningful way. Like, you're shown how it impacts her life, how it impacts her parents, how she's forced to leave at certain points because it's not safe for her. There are some parallels in this book with Habibi in the storyline even. Like, she gets,
what would you say?
Well, she gets, there's a period where she gets drug addled, you know, where she just mm-hmm. is doing drugs all the time just to escape from her.
She becomes the school drug dealer.
Yes, exactly. She becomes a school drug dealer, you know, spends the entire, most of her time doing drugs. There's that little chapter. The structure of this is, it's also very heavily kind of a very tight kind of structure. The panel, mm-hmm. the way the panels are set, you know, it's all squares and rectangles.
Right.
There's no, I mean, the size will vary, but every page, there's no circles, there's no other shapes.
I don't know if that's conceptual, but it makes it seem like she's not a top-tier illustrator.
Right. You think it's just that to, you know, make it easy to try and...
I don't know if it's make it easy as much as it's just what occurred to her to do it.
Yeah. Just simple. Keep it simple, stupid, if you...
Maybe.
You always have a question.
You know, or maybe she's just not as, you know, she just doesn't have the, I don't even know what you'd call it, the boldness to, you know, break out of those panels and still tell the story. But it really isn't relevant. It works just fine.
I think, because
it's got so much honesty that it works. It doesn't need... amazing art. And I think that was the point I was driving at before, is the simpleness of the art. It enhances that aspect of it. It makes it feel more real and honest. This feels more like something that she wrote for herself that just somehow became, you know, this... Well, I mean, on a small publisher scale, a success.
Yeah.
You know, a commercial success.
I mean, it's not a
huge blockbuster or anything.
But I do want to say that despite, you know, we talked about her not being some top flight illustrator or anything, there is a huge challenge in sometimes portraying the characters in this book, because everyone has to wear the same clothes for a lot of the time. Like, they're like this, you know, the theocracy enforces, like, you know, all the women to wear, you know, veils and be covered all the time when they're public. And, you know, it can present challenges when all the characters are wearing the exact same clothes and you can't delineate them in that way. You have to show, you know, either facial characteristics or, you know, expressions or, you know, minor facial tics.
She is pretty remarkably talented at caricaturing. I mean, obviously, we have no idea what any of these people look like. I think there's maybe one picture of her.
Yeah, in the back.
Yeah, but she is very good at caricaturing these people and making them look like unique characters with black and white artwork and all the challenges, which you just said, you know, that most people have similar hair color and eye color. It's all in black and white, and they all dress alike.
And,
you know, and she's able to create unique, identifiable characters out of all the people in her art, in her life, with very simple artwork.
Yeah,
seems like you brought up the word. What is it? Orientalism.
Yeah, and last week. Yeah,
last week, and I had a conversation about this with Derek the Anarchist last night.
But how did the discussion about Orientalism go? Where did that...
I don't know. It kind of meandered a lot. But I just sort of, you know...
Much like our discussion about Orientalism.
Yeah, yes. But did we talk about it much?
Not much. We briefly skated over it.
Yeah. But it's... I mean, the book, Habibi, clearly... you know, suffers from it.
Yes, this does not. This is, I mean, it's told from the point of view of an Iranian And it's very honest, very true. Plus,
one of the things, though, is Habibi is about Arabs, and this, yes. Iranians don't identify as Arabs.
They do not.
Yeah, they, I mean, I don't know, Persians.
Yes, Persians. Is their ethnic history. I mean, if you want to go back far enough. But
of course, we in the West
don't know the difference.
Well, at least we Americans don't know better not to just lump them all together.
Yes, it's all, they live close to each other. They're the same.
I was actually kind of fascinated to find out, you know, that the word Iran comes from Aryan.
Yeah, I saw that as well. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you
that,
know.
It's that there, I mean, I knew that Indians and a lot of Arabs, but also Iranians, are genetically almost identical to any, you know, European person.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, considered Caucasian.
Yeah, they all came from the same place.
Yeah, yeah. From the Garden of Eden.
Yep, Garden of Eden. From Adam and Eve.
Yes.
Till that damn snake got in the way.
That son of a bitch.
God, what are we talking about?
The truth. Come on, man.
The truth. But, I mean, there's a lot that goes on in this book, but really it does a terrific job in grounding this kind of these terrible events in Iran's history of the, I mean, hundreds of thousands of deaths.
Yeah.
They point out that the in ranks of intelligentsia, the smart, intelligent of the next generation that was coming are killed, you know, in this war, and nothing happens out of it. A pointless war. And
yeah.
this is grounded. All these events are grounded in her story about growing up, and you really feel for her. You really feel for these people in this story. And the storytelling is top notch. She does an excellent job.
It really is.
In connecting you to her story and the story of Iran in this time period.
Here's something that I'm curious about. It doesn't feel like it feels good that it ends where it ends.
Yeah.
Nothing really is resolved.
No.
It's just sort of like we drop in, we see this long segment of her life, of her growing up, and then we sort of leave. There's no real, you know, rise to action. There's no big climax that happens necessarily.
Yeah.
You know? There's just her sort of going through these different phases of her life and reacting to things and changing herself and reinventing herself a couple of different times, but none of those things really lead to any resolution, any ending. It just
there's kind of just a denouement at the end, and that's it. You know, she's leaving the country for the last time. Well, not last time, but you know, leaving it as a resident. She moves out of the country, I think, for good at that point. And I guess that is
a little different. I guess that's the opposite of what I said.
Well, I mean, but it's not told in like a dramatic way. It's not, it's just,
yeah, it's not like the death of her parents or, you know,
yeah, it's just her going, well, I'm leaving. And, you know, she does these few things, you know, to say goodbye to her country, and then she's gone. And there's not a big impact or big moment. You don't feel, you don't feel like, oh, this is the end.
Right.
But I think that's the point. I mean, obviously, she's grown older, and she's written this. She's, you know, written this story, among other things. I think it's just that's exactly what this is. It's just a snapshot, and it kind of, it's not necessarily have to have a big ending. I think we keep coming back to honesty, and how this book feels real. Like, it feels like there's no facade, or you know, you feel like what you're reading is the truth. And I think that this ending reinforces that. You know, life does not always have big moments to mark a transition from one thing to the next. It just kind of, things end and you move on and you change and you grow older, or, you know, people change, things happen.
But I forgot that her grandmother did die, but I think that's kind of,
it's just what a footnote.
Throws me. Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of what throws me is she leaves and there's not like a whole lot of whatever about her leaving. And then she says, you know, and I never saw my grandmother again. The end.
I think she saw her one more time.
No, I know. I know. I'm paraphrasing in an ignorant way.
Yeah, but yeah, I know. But it is not a big moment at the end of this story. But I think, again, that reinforces the honesty of it, mm-hmm. which I think that's the thing that we both have said about it. And I think that honesty grounds the story and makes it more, you know, more powerful. And it's a hard thing to find in a lot of stories. Truth and honesty make it feel like a real story.
Right. I think more and more it's, I think people crave, you know, honesty in art.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people define art.
Yeah.
As searching for the truth.
But I mean, we're shoveled so much, you know, corporate shit that's just made to not offend us.
Purposefully offend us so that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. To shock us in a way that we're all sort of becoming used to. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people seek out this thing that's, you know, art that's not afraid to make this, not afraid to be what it is, even if it's a little flawed, even if it's a little muppety. You know?
Yeah.
It is what it is, and it's not a shame to be that, and you know, you either like it or you don't.
No, but I would say this is it was an excellent choice, and I think it paints a really interesting picture of Iran and its history, and makes me feel connected, made me feel, you know, deep emotion about this place I've never been, mm-hmm. and these people I've never known.
Yeah. I wish there was more like it, and I feel like it's a great way to learn about the world and recent history. The whole political aspect, and it's all told through characters, you know?
Right.
She doesn't, like, stand on a soapbox and say these things.
No, this character has this perspective, this character has that perspective.
Yeah, when they talk about how the West was selling arms to Iran and Iraq because they were enemies and because they were also enemies of Israel.
Yep.
And that's very plausible. I don't know.
No, it definitely happened.
Well, I mean, you can say that for sure. I mean, clearly they were sold weapons, but was that the reason?
Well,
provable?
The reasoning, no. I mean, obviously, we don't know why.
That's what I'm saying.
But no, but I mean, they were. They did. It's, we did. It sell makes. Weapons it makes. All those
yeah. Absolutely, that happened. It's. You know.
I don't. No. There's no. You'll never get anyone to admit why we did those things.
No. No. Absolutely. Not for
the I mean,
it's incredibly plausible, and it's something that I had certainly never thought of, but it makes an awful lot of sense. But, you know, these things are brought up. I just always find it interesting when someone makes an anti-Western statement and does it, you know, in a way that actually challenges the way that I think about the world. Not that that necessarily did, because it's like, oh, yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense. But, you know, there's some of that in here.
Yeah, it's politically a lot of political history, and I don't know. It's conjecture, but I mean it's all through characters. So, like you said,
it's not presented as the gospel truth.
And I think that's also kind of the point where it's she is showing all these different perspectives and they, how they all, each one painted her thought process growing up, and plus all the persecution she went through as a woman in this society, which is also an interesting contrast to Habibi in the fact that she shows very well how a woman's role in this kind of society is challenged heavily, how she's always in danger of being stopped by these police, how a young girl could be arrested and then sentenced to execution, but because you can't execute a virgin, they get married off, raped, and then executed.
Mm-hmm.
And amazingly enough, there's very little nudity in this book compared to... And you are... it tells that kind of danger of control of a woman's body and how she dresses and how she acts and their power and lack of power. And it shows it wonderfully well. I mean, you get a heavy sense of dread every time that she is, like, stopped because she's wearing lipstick or the wrong kind of tennis shoes, the wrong kind of shoes. And it doesn't have to do it. It does it without showing these women as sexual objects. In contrast to Habibi, which has a lot of nudity. So it can be done.
I never said it couldn't be.
No, I know. I'm not saying you're not the opposing argument or anything. I think it's a very interesting contrast to Habibi, which they're saying a lot of the same things, I think.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But they just go very different ways to explore the same kind of issues. Well, this is a lot more focused than Habibi, certainly. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not as nearly as gorgeous.
No. But, you know, that is what it is. It's just sort of part of what this book is.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't be the same,
I think. I don't think it would. If she had hired another illustrator to draw this, I don't think it would have been as good. No. Even if it was an amazing illustrator.
No, I have to agree with you.
It kind of needs to be that. It needs to be this.
And I think I would suggest this to someone before I suggest it to Habibi.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can. First of all, it's shorter. It's a faster read. I think I'd have a more broad audience for this book than I would trying to suggest to BB.
One of the things that I'm remembering, I'm looking at this panel towards the end of book two. Do you have it all in one collection?
Yeah, it's just all together.
Okay. Well, there were, as you and I discussed, there were in the French edition, there were four books. In English, it was released as two books. They were condensed to two books.
Right.
And you have it in one super collection.
I do.
Of all four.
Right.
But this is towards the end.
Okay.
Where it's the panel and it shows all the symbols and things going on, drawn white on black. And then there's the panel in the middle of all the bearded men. The more time passed, the more I became conscious of the contrast between the official representation of my country and the real life of the people, the one that went on behind the walls. It just makes me think of the shallow understanding, not just that we as Americans have of other people's cultures, but a lot of people do. And that was one of the things that me and Derek the Anarchist talked about, is he said that people have been making the same arguments about the Middle East or, you know, this whole part of the world and Muslim culture for years. They've been saying, well, look how they treat their women. Look how they treat their women. People have been making these statements, you know, since like the Victorian age.
Yeah.
You know, and it itself is part of Orientalism. And that panel in particular, it says something important to me. This book is putting the human face on something that gets painted in such broad strokes that, you know, you might as well just be completely ignorant of it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, knew nothing about Iran until I saw this movie, and now I feel like I am a little bit more well-educated.
Yes, you know? Yeah.
I don't say that I'm going to know everything, the beginning and end of it, but I feel like I get it a little bit more. And I also know why they don't wear ties.
Yeah.
It's those
little nuances.
Yeah.
That really kind of humanizes and then teaches the subtleties of the history. But Persepolis by Marjan Satrapi. I'll go. Hopefully that's correct. I even made a note to myself to look it up before I came and I forgot.
Way to shit the bed on that one.
I know. Just kill me now. But
beautiful.
Yeah. It's an excellent book. I would definitely recommend it to anyway. I mean, it's an honest portrayal of Iran during this really dramatic time period.
Mm-hmm.
A really impactful time period. I mean, even on world history.
Yeah.
Really, it shaped a big portion of world history itself. And
I think it gives you, I don't know, even more perspective where they say, as long as there's oil, there will be war.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You know?
There's one part that was left out of this that was in the movie. Have you seen? You haven't seen the movie. We've already established that.
I have not seen the movie.
Yeah. But there's this part where they show sort of the history of Iran, but it's done in a really tongue-in-cheek way. And there's this, I think he was British. It showed the British guy coming in and how they installed the dictator, but the guy came in and he's speaking like really bad French.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's parlez-vous français, you know.
Right.
I don't know. It was glossed over in a completely different way. It's just interesting to compare the book and the movie, because they do tell an almost identical story, but it's just odd what nuances got left out, and that one was invented entirely for the film. Does Persepolis make you sad?
A little bit. It is a little sad. Yeah.
Admittedly, yes. It's
a little heavy, but I mean, it's important. You have to sometimes read sad things and it keep your perspective, you know, from being
skewed.
You have
to read sad things and cut yourself in the bathtub.
I wouldn't go that far. I keep those two things separate.
You cut yourself outside the bathtub?
No, I keep it in the bathtub, but I keep the sad things away from the cutting.
Okay.
That's purely a moment of euphoria for me. Nothing? You're not going to touch that?
I'll let you say whatever you want to say. It all warms my heart.
I was hoping you were going to say something clever.
I got nothing, man.
You don't have your wellspring has run dry?
Give me a couple of minutes. I got to take a nap.
So that is Nerdbo Book Club. We're going to end this week with a new segment, something we touched upon briefly when we first read The Crow.
On the first Nerd Boy
first
Book Club.
Nerd
but
Boy
was it really the first? Not really.
But
first under that name.
Yes, under the new name. I did a little bit of a voice of Richmond from the IT crowd. Who, if you're unfamiliar with their show, you should definitely go check it out. It's an excellent, excellent show. But Richmond is this goth guy lives in the basement.
Yeah.
And he has a voice like this, kind of like if Jerry Seinfeld was a British goth.
Yeah,
that's basically.
So
I'm not wearing any makeup.
Say, what is the deal with airplane food?
What is the deal with airplane food?
It makes me very sad.
All they can give us is peanuts.
How does it make you feel, Richmond?
It makes me feel sad.
Do you want to write a poem about it?
That'll be after we run out of crow material.
There's too much.
No, eventually, eventually I'll read every... There's not that much dialogue in this book. Eventually I'll read through it all. And I'll just have a little resort to reading...
You found a section for us?
Yes, I have. I have a little bit. I have a little section that I found. I think we discussed it even a little bit when we first discussed this book. It's not a really long one, but it doesn't matter. It's very The Crow-ish.
Excellent.
But I'm going to read it in Richmond's voice, and we'll see how it goes.
You mean Richmond's going to read it for us?
I mean Richmond. Here, Richmond, read this for us.
It's a Raymond Chandler evening at the end of someone's day, and I'm standing in my pocket. I'm slowly turning gray. I remember what I told you, but I can't remember why. And the yellow leaves are falling in a spiral from the sky. There's a body on the railings that I can't identify. I'd like to reassure you, but I'm not that kind of guy. It's a Raymond Chandler evening, and the pavements are all wet. And I'm lurking in the shadows, because it hasn't happened yet.
You sound so sad, Richmond.
I'm not sad.
You just said you were sad before.
Shut your mouth, pain junkie.
There's no need for name calling.
I haven't asked you anything.
If anyone is still listening,
they're gonna go kill themselves.
Yeah, I think everyone is gonna go jump in front of a train.
Why would you jump in front of a train? They have spaces inside that you may enter.
But that's good news.
You can get inside the train.
You don't have to ride on the outside.
You don't have to get run over by it. It's colossally heavy. It would probably hurt.
Yes. So, folks, that was Richmond Reads the Crow. But, folks, that brings us to the end of this episode.
Don't be sad.
Don't be sad. It'll be okay. There's another one next week. We promise. We are prodigious. Prodigious and prestigious.
Oh, yeah.
That's us. That was episode 24, and we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can like us there. You can see all our posts. I also post other stuff there. Everything's up in your feed. Leave us comments. All that good stuff. You can also find us on iTunes. Just subscribe to us there. Please leave us reviews. Good reviews. Get us more listeners. And we want more listeners. You can also find us on Twitter. We have each our own individual accounts, plus the official Handsome Boys Comics Hour account, which is at HBC Hour. Then again, that is at HBC Hour. There's also a Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. I'm MixmasterCereal, all one word. And I'm also, let's see, on the Tumblr, the same name. Eric, where can they find your stuff online?
You can check out my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see a collection of many of the things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can look at me on Twitter at Mr. Bad Example, spelled like mrbadexample.com.
So
I'm retarded. I just said mrbadexample.com.
.com.
I think I'm taking a nap or something.
Let's cut it.
So it's twitter.com/mrbadexample.com/talktoeric.com. Go to keyword bonus. JesusChrist.com. I am an idiot.com.
Keyword bonus. So, until next week, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Hey, folks, we forgot to mention that next week
we will be doing We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. So if you want to pick it up, it's available on Comixology in collected edition. Read it with us. See you next week.